Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Why do I have to be spiritual when there's so much to do in the world, so much to achieve? Why be spiritual? Why bother? So this is a very common question, particularly we have so many students with us tonight. You've got such busy lives, so much to do. Why be spiritual? Well, let's say for a moment that you wake up one morning and you take your temperature, and your temperature says 101. It means something's off. We don't know what's off, but something is not right. An infection of some sort, a bacteria, a virus. Now imagine that you ask everyone around you, what's your temperature? And everyone around you tells you 98.6. That's how you know that 101 is a fever. That's how you know there's something wrong. But now imagine that you ask everyone around you, what's your temperature? And they say 101. Do you still have a fever? Yeah, of course you do. But in the first case, we know that something is off. We're going to look for a cause. We're going to look for a solution. We're going to go to the doctor. Whether we go to an allopathic doctor or a homeopathic doctor or an Ayurvedic doctor, it doesn't matter. But we're going to go to someone to help treat that which is off. They'll diagnose it and then they'll treat it. But when everybody's fever is 101, what happens? I think that it's normal. I still have a fever, but I no longer go to the doctor because everybody has this fever. Must be normal. Now the fever is still ravaging my body. But because everyone else has it, I don't look for a cause and I don't look for a solution. And what is happening in our lives is most of us live in a state of pretty regular stress. Anybody here feel stress? Yeah. So this is pretty common. We feel stress, we feel worry, we feel anxiety, we feel depression. But when you look around and you talk to your friends, what do you find? They're also stressed. They're also worried. They also have anxiety. They also have depression. And so what happens is we start to think that this is normal. Now, at your age, it is relatively normal. It's sort of part of growing up. Stress and anxiety tend to be part of a pretty regular package deal of adolescence. But most of us don't lose it. It stays with us. We're stressed about our jobs. We're stressed about how we look. We're stressed about how much money we make. We're stressed about whether our spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend is talking to somebody else. We're stressed in traffic. We're stressed about what's going to happen to us, to our family members. We're stressed about so many things. And what spirituality does is it helps bring that temperature back to normal. It's what helps us get grounded, get centered, be able to stay afloat in the waves of life. Has everyone here seen the ocean? Everyone here? Is there anyone here who has not seen the ocean? Okay. So what is there on the surface of the ocean? Waves, right. And what do waves do? Yeah, they wave. They go up and down, up and down, up and down. Now, if I live on the surface of the ocean, I'm going to go up and down, up and down. If my life is based upon my happiness, my peace, my centering, my joy, my emotional state, if that is based upon something that someone else does, how they talk to me, how they treat me, how they act, whether it's a friend, whether it's my boss, whether it's a colleague, whether it's a loved one, if I'm based on how they treat me, I'm going to go up and down. If my happiness and my joy and my peace and my meaning in life is based on interest rates or the stock market or my grades or my weight or how I feel about myself when I look in the mirror or how popular I am, I'm going to go up and down because these things all go up and down in life. And when they're up, in the right direction, we feel really good. But what does physics tell us? Everything that goes up has to come down. And this is the nature of nature. And so if I'm attached to the surface waves, if my life, my joy, my peace, my meaning in life, my fulfillment in life is hooked into something over which I have no control, and it's hooked into something that is on the superficial surface level, I may love the ups, but you can be very sure there's going to be downs. And this is what happens in our lives, and this is what causes stress. When I'm going up even, I'm always worried. What happens if it comes down? What if it comes down? And when it's going down, I'm always stressed anyway. Always depressed. And so the answer to that, this is the point of the spiritual life. What the spiritual life does, it doesn't say get out of the ocean. It doesn't say don't live. It doesn't say don't enjoy. It doesn't say don't get wet. What it says is, connect yourself in the depths of the ocean. Because in the depths of the ocean, there's no waves. The depths of the ocean are always, always very still, always very calm. And you know what is even more interesting is that it's even more life that's there. When you look at the ocean on the surface, it looks just like just water. And then you put on a mask, you put on a snorkel, you get your face in the ocean, and you start to see all of the beautiful colors. You see the coral, you see the fish. But then people who have scuba dived say, snorkeling's nothing, you've got to go scuba diving. And then you go deeper. And when you go deeper, what you get is even more life, even more beauty, even more colors. And the same thing is true in life. We stay on the surface because we think that that's what it's about. But the deeper you go, that's where the stillness is. That's where the calmness is, that's where the grounding is, and that's actually where life is. That's where the excitement is, on the inside. Not going up and down in the waves. In that connection with who you really are. All of that. So that's why we become spiritual. When you are grounded and anchored in spirituality, you can still be on the waves, but you don't get thrown around by them. There's a beautiful story of a boat in the middle of the ocean. And on the boat, there's a mathematician and a philosopher and a scientist. And the boatmen, of course. And they're on the boat going in the ocean. And the mathematician says to the boatman, "So tell me, Mr. Boatman, you must know some mathematics. You must know at least, you know, trigonometry or geometry." And the boatman says, "No, I'm not educated in that way. I only know how to take the name of the divine in the morning and at night before I sleep, and during the day as much as I can." And the mathematician says, "Then at least 30% of your life has gone in vain." And next, the scientist says, "Well, you must at least know science. You must know Newton's laws of physics." And the boatman says, "I'm not educated in that way. I only know how to give more than I receive. I only know how to try to see the divine in everyone I'm with." And the scientist says, "Then at least 40% of your life has gone in vain." And lastly, the philosopher says, "Well, all right, maybe you're not a math and science guy, but you must know philosophy. Plato, Aristotle, or Vedanta, some philosophy you must know." And the boatman just closes his eyes and he enters this beautiful, beautiful meditative trance. And he says, "I'm not educated in that way." And the philosopher says, "Well, then at least 50% of your life has gone in vain." And at this moment, a wave comes. The ocean starts to get very, very stormy and a wave comes. And the boatman realizes this boat is going to capsize. And he says to his passengers, "Do you know how to swim?" "No," they all say. And the boat crashes upside down. And the boatman watches very sadly as all of his passengers drown. And he says, "I think 100% of your lives have gone in vain." And I share this story very specifically about your question, because most of us focus our lives metaphorically on the math, the science, and the philosophy. We focus our lives on whether it's academia, whether it's our professional world, our career world. It's the stuff we're supposed to learn. We're supposed to learn addition. We're supposed to get a good career. We're supposed to succeed in that way, and that's what we focus on. And that's the stuff on the surface. Now, it's great for so many things, nothing wrong with it. The problem is if that's all we have, we don't know how to swim. We're not anchored. What an anchor in a boat does is it keeps it from drifting. It keeps the waves from capsizing. So what spirituality does is it teaches us to swim. Doesn't mean that you can't also be on the waves. In fact, you're even much more able to enjoy the waves because you're not dependent on them. If my entire sense of self, my peace, my well-being, my happiness is dependent on all of these things in the outer world, then somebody is mean to me, somebody ignores me, somebody doesn't invite me to their party, I don't get the grade I want, my parents yell at me, whatever happens, then my entire sense of self drops. And that's not fun for anybody. That's not enjoyable for anybody. When we say we enjoy the waves, what we enjoy is going up. What the going down does is just gives us at least something to know when we're going up. We think, well, at least maybe it'll be better tomorrow. But when you're grounded spiritually, what you're able to do is be in the world, enjoy the world. Absolutely. There's nothing about spirituality that says, thou shalt not eat chocolate ice cream. Thou shalt not go to a party. Thou shalt not fall in love. Thou shalt not have friends. Thou shalt not go to the movies. There's no commandments like that. Thou shalt not laugh and enjoy and have friends and fun. But what it says is, who you are, your sense of knowledge of yourself, your happiness, your peace is not dependent on those things. So we become spiritual to be able to enjoy the waves if we want.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. How does one connect with their divine self and stay connected? I'm going to change the word divine self to true self. Because if we say divine self, what that implies is that there's a non-divine self. This is my divine self. This is my divine self. This is my non-divine self. What we have is a true self and a non-true self. The non-true self is the stuff that most of us actually identify as. Our name, our ages, where we're from, the color of our skin, our bank accounts, our careers, our titles, all of that stuff that we identify as self, but actually isn't. And the reason that we know it isn't is it keeps changing. The example that I always give about this is if you're driving down the freeway and someone calls you on the phone and says, "Who are you?" And you say, "I'm exit 30. They say, "No, no, I didn't say, where are you? I said, who are you?" And now you say, "I told you I'm exit 30. Or, well, now I'm almost exit 31. They would think that either you couldn't hear them, that your phone was too staticky, or that you had gone absolutely crazy. We understand intuitively that exit 30, exit 31 is simply the intersection of time and space that our vehicle is at right now. It's true, I mean, it's not a lie that that's where we are, but it's not who we are. And if I say to you, I am 45, I'm female, I'm white, I'm American, I'm a sannyasi, well, that's all true. I mean, none of it is a lie. And yet, it's what we call the lowercase t true. It's true at this exact intersection of time and space. It's not the capital T truth. It's just telling you the story of my vehicle and where it happens to be right at this intersection. But our true self is the divine. The true self is the essence. This is just the container. And so when we connect with our true self, what we have to do is sink beneath the container. If we're stuck on the container, we're not going to get to essence. I mean, if I pick this glass up and I spend all my time just marveling at how beautiful it is, or how ugly it is, or how solid it is, or soft it is, it's not going to quench my thirst. In order to do that, I've actually got to take the lid off and drink what's inside. And the same is true about our vehicles. I mean, there's nothing wrong with admiring the beauty of the glass. It just doesn't do anything for my thirst. And so there's nothing wrong with paying attention to our vehicles. We've only got one. It's a temple. If who we are is the divine and the divine lives in this vehicle, it means the vehicle is a temple. We have to care for it. We have to worship it. We have to take as much care as we do of our temples, our churches, our synagogues, our mosques, wherever the divine resides. And yet, we don't confuse form for content. We don't confuse packaging for essence. And so our true self is the essence. The true self is that spirit. And the way to connect with it, there's many ways, but a very simple and easy way is through a practice called niti niti, which is not this, not this, not this. And so we begin literally by saying, I am not my orange sari. I am not my skin. I am not my bones. And should anyone doubt that, the reason that we know that that's true is my skin keeps sloughing off. I get new skin every day, but I is still there. My bones break. I'm still there. So, well, I'm not my blood. Get a blood transfusion, donate blood. I'm still there. I'm not my organs. Get a transplant of one of those, I'm still here. We go deeper and deeper and deeper, recognizing that all of the parts of our body actually slough off and regenerate over a period of years. After every 8 or 9 years, you're brand new. Brand new. If anything that you're holding on to happened to you more than 8 or 9 years ago, it did not happen to you. Doesn't make it right, doesn't make it okay, but it didn't happen to you. So we go through that, and then we get a little bit deeper, and we say, well, I'm also not my emotions. I'm not my anger. The reason I know that is I'm not always angry. I may be angry way too frequently, but I'm not always angry. And I don't cease to exist when I'm not angry. I'm not my depression. I wasn't always depressed. There are moments in which I'm not depressed, but I don't cease to exist. I'm not even my thoughts, because there's a very small space in between my thoughts. And in that space, I don't evaporate. And if I did, if I were my thoughts and I ceased to exist even momentarily between the thoughts, who would have the next thought? So we go slowly, slowly, as deep as we can until there's really nothing else to remove. And if you do that in a very meditative place and you allow yourself just to sit there after peeling layer after layer, what you find is there's this beautiful stillness, this beautiful experience. And then maybe something else will come to you. I'm the child of an alcoholic. Well, no, because that child is not who I am. If I was that child more than 8 or 9 years ago, and if you believe in past lives, wasn't true in my last birth. So we can remove everything that we identify until we get into what the Buddhists speak about as nothingness and the Hindus speak about as everythingness. But it's the same place. I mean, if I've got a jar of air and I break my jar, what do I have? So on the one hand, you could say, well, you no longer have your air because you had this glass of air and it broke. You have nothing now. On the other hand, you could say, well, all I did was lose that dividing line between my cup of air and all of the air. So now actually I have all the air instead of none of the air. Neither is right, neither is wrong. They're two entirely different ways of looking at it. But you'll recognize they actually take us to exactly the same place. We all agree that what we're left with is just air. And that's the truth of who you are. And the last piece of how do we stay connected to that is just in remembrance. There's no magic, unfortunately. And it would be really nice if you could get like those nicotine patches, you know, for people who are trying to quit smoking and the patch just keeps giving them nicotine all day long. It would be really nice if we could get, you know, a patch that would just, every time you forgot, the patch would remind you. And you'd somehow just get this infusion of remembrance and awakening. But we don't have one. What it is just, it's just practice. And in the same way that in meditation, when our mind wanders, we just bring it back. And when you start meditating, you find that your mind wanders more than it's still. Your meditation feels like you do nothing but keep bringing your mind back. But then slowly, 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 the spaces in between having to bring the mind back lengthen. It stays. And you're able to catch it faster and bring it back faster. And slowly, slowly, you're able to accumulate lots of moments, consecutive moments of being there. And this is what it's like of living within our true self, is it's just about remembrance, coming back. A mantra is a great life raft to bring us back. Our breath is a great life raft to bring us back. They're just techniques to bring us out of where we've gone and back into who we are. And slowly, slowly, you keep living as that. And the last piece of this, though, is just to remember not to berate yourself, because in this consciousness and acceptance of the invitation to live in that consciousness and to join and to connect and to live with love and to live with connection, it's very important not to leave ourselves out of the equation. Many of us are very, very comfortable with compassion, with connection, with love, forgiveness, seeing the divine in all as a practice, as long as it relates to everyone other than ourselves. It becomes very difficult when we have to turn it back inward. And so what you get is, oh my God, you are so stupid, look at that, you forgot to be compassionate again. You are so stupid. Right? So where's my compassion for myself? I mean, here I am berating myself for not being compassionate to another. And that irony kills a lot of us. So we have to just remember that as we work on staying connected, that it's not just connected to God outside of us and those around us. It's connected to within us. And when we lose it, when we find ourselves disconnected, to have the same compassion and the same love and the same understanding and the same presence for our lowercase s self that wandered off, that we have for those of us around us, that we have for the world around us.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. Chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita describes how to be a perfect yogi, acting without the pairs of opposites, likes and dislikes, acting without any desires. How do you have the desire for self-realization without acting on the desire? The Bhagavad Gita did not say, thou shalt not act upon thy desires. What it said is, thou shalt not be attached to the fruits of the results of your actions. I may desire to have apples. In my desire to have apples, I plant apple seeds that hopefully tomorrow will sprout into apple trees and I will have apples. Wonderful. That's what God gave us brains for. I desire apples. How can I have apples? Well, I plant apple seeds. If I take care of the seeds, I'll have a tree. If I take care of the tree, I will have apples. However, if the seed doesn't sprout, if some animal comes and eats it up, if the seed sprouts and I have a tree, but the tree does not give me apples, or gives me apples, but the apples are rotten or sour, or the birds and the worms eat the apples before I get to them, I still don't have apples. And if I was attached to the fruit, literally in this case, the apples, I'm going to be frustrated. That frustration is the impediment to my spiritual growth. So God did not say, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita did not say, thou shalt not plant seeds. Thou shalt not water them. No. What he said was, plant the seeds, water them, shine the sun on them. But don't be attached to how long it takes them to give you fruit, to what type of fruit, to how much fruit. If you get your apples, great. If you don't get your apples, no problem. That's the point. And the reason for that is we don't have any control over it. I have control over the seeds I plant. I have no control over what happens after that. I have no way to make that seed sprout. Sure, I can follow all the rules of the right soil and the right water and the right, you know, sun, but I don't know what makes a seed sprout. I don't have the seed sprouting mantra or magic wand. Sprout. There's an intelligence in that seed that makes it sprout. How do you make it happen? Who knows? The most brilliant scientists in the world, knowing everything, cannot create a seed that will sprout. Cannot create a leaf, cannot create a mosquito. They could draw you diagrams of exactly the molecular structure of the hydrogen and the oxygen and the nitrogen and the carbon. How they bind, but they cannot create it. Give them a petri dish, give them all the nitrogen, all the hydrogen, all the oxygen, all the carbon, they still cannot make life. We don't have control over it. All we have control over is our actions. And so what Krishna's teaching is not thou shalt not act. In fact, he's teaching the exact opposite. You must act. You must act in alignment with your dharma. But you must not be attached to the fruits of that. So when you talk about a desire for self-realization, I go, I meditate. Okay, well, it's good to have a desire for self-realization. It's what makes me meditate instead of go out for cheeseburgers. So I meditate. But now, look what happens. If I'm meditating to meditate in that moment, seed has been planted, I've sat down, I've crossed my legs, I'm chanting my mantra, the lights are off, I've turned off my phone. I'm planting the seed. Then I find my mind wanders. Oh my God, this is ridiculous. I'm a horrible meditator. I'm never going to get self-realization. That guru said, if I just chant the mantra, I'll get enlightened. He's stupid. I need a new guru. You see what happens? That's because I was attached to the fruits. It's like when they say, you know, the watched pot will never boil. It's sort of that on a much deeper spiritual level. If I'm attached to what's going to happen from my actions, even if what I'm looking for is as noble and pure and spiritual as enlightenment, if what I've got is a desire for enlightenment, then I've created and I'm living in this constant experience of separation. There's me over here wanting enlightenment, which is over there. And every moment I'm still separate. I'm watching myself. Are you enlightened yet? Are you enlightened yet? Well, it's the very act of this separation that keeps me from being enlightened. It's this very act of living in my judging mind that keeps me from being enlightened. And so what I have to do is plant the seed. I sit, I meditate. And I have faith. All my job is to do that meditation. Plant that seed, water it. With the full faith that God knows what he's doing, just like he knows how to make that seed sprout, which I really have no idea how to do. It's all right, God knows. The seed has an intelligence in itself. My soul has an intelligence in and of itself. There's a knowing, an awareness. This is what consciousness is. Consciousness is conscious. Doesn't need me to figure it out. Doesn't need me to be judging it or rating it on a scale of 1 to 10. That just keeps me separate from my consciousness. Then there's me and my consciousness. So I'm never going to be enlightened. Enlightenment is the merging. Yoga means union. As long as I'm separate from my meditation, from my enlightenment, from my consciousness, I'll never experience it. I have to be there. I have to be with it in order to be there. You can't be the watcher of your own enlightenment. At some point, it's like you can't merge into real love if you're watching it. You merge into that state. That's the oneness. That's the real union. And yes, I would be remiss if I don't mention that at the absolute highest, highest, highest level, yes, you can be conscious of your own enlightenment. But it comes not from the mind. It comes from a place of such consciousness, such full awakening, that it's actually easier for us not even to think about that because we confuse our mind with that place. And so for the moment, it's actually easier and simpler to operate simply thinking about merging into the enlightenment, merging into the soul, becoming one with that, one with our consciousness. And let the rest just happen later. It is our overly thinking mind that keeps us from experiencing. The more we think about something, the farther we are from it. You know, it's like as your eyesight starts to go and you have to hold things a little bit farther to be able to see them, right? In order to be able to read it. Friend told me, you know you need reading glasses when your arms are too short. So in order to be able to see it, we have to just hold it, you know, a little farther and farther and farther. Well, that's all right if what we're doing is reading a book or a letter or a note or a menu or whatever it is we're reading, a newspaper. But if what we're doing is connecting with our soul, our consciousness, you don't want to hold it at an arm's length. You don't want to be thinking about it. The more I think about it, the farther I'm holding it away. Let me just examine that a little better. If it could just go back a little further. The very act of thinking so much about it is keeping it farther away. Don't try to name it. Don't try to understand it. Don't try to figure out how you're going to weave it into your book. That's the problem. How am I going to tell this to people? How am I going to explain it? Don't worry about that. Just let it happen. It's much more important. Because when it happens, then you really have something to share with the world. If you try to name it as you go along, you miss it. Because as it's happening, it's not semantic. You cannot name it as it's happening. I mean, can you imagine falling into the arms of your loved one and saying, "Is that your bicep or your tricep that's squeezing me so tightly?" Right? I mean, even if you happen to be a doctor, even if you happen to be an anatomy specialist, right? I mean, you'd be missing something in the moment, right? If you were trying to figure out, God, is that her trapezius muscle or is that her bicep or, you know, what? Something is squeezing me. Let me figure out exactly what that is. Doesn't matter. What's happening is you're being hugged, you're being held. Whether it's the, you know, bicep or the tricep or the trapezius muscle, who cares? You'll figure that all out later. You'll look at a diagram later on. You'll figure it out. At the moment, just be there. Otherwise, you miss it.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation. How do you maintain your energy to continue giving and giving for so long? The beautiful thing about giving, when you give of yourself, when you give of your love, it actually replenishes you. If I have just this glass of water, of which I've already drank most of it, and there's, you know, a little bit of water left. If I had to give some of this to everyone here, it would run out very, very quickly. Or I would only be able to give a tiny bit to everyone because there's a finite amount. But when you give of yourself, when you give of your love, it's infinite. It's not about having to replenish yourself. The giving actually replenishes you. And the reason that it does that is that which really fills us, that really brings us the energy to live, that gives us that enthusiasm, that pulls us out of bed in the morning, is deep connection. Whether it's deep connection to another being, this is what helps mothers go on an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours of sleep for years, sacrifice so much of themselves. Why? Because of that connection. So the connection to a being, the divine, many beings, ourself, God in any form, that connection is actually what keeps us going. And so if I withdraw all of my energy, withdraw all of my resources, I'm not going to give. I need to replenish. Well, the question then becomes, from where am I going to replenish? And with what am I going to replenish? I mean, with my glass of water, I would just say to one of our sweet Rishi Kumars, could you go in the kitchen and go and bring me some more water? But with my life force, what am I going to replenish with? The only thing that replenishes it is life, and a life of connection. And this is where the spiritual practice and the spiritual path is such a great antidote in many ways to the fatigue that afflicts so many of us. I mean, yes, you need a good night's sleep, but many, many, many people, large percentages of people, tragically, particularly in the West, on long nights of sleep, still feel drained, burned out, fried, exasperated, frustrated, enervated, de-energized, not because they're not getting enough sleep, but because that which they're doing in their days has cut them off from life. What we need to do in order to stay energized is stay connected to real life, to the divine in all forms, whether it's the form of your child, a sunset, a tree, all children in the world, or just every aspect of creation, because it's all the Creator. Whatever you're serving, if we serve as we are serving the divine, from that connection, we actually get the energy. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.